Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Dude, I hate fantasy football.
Dude, I mean, it's the worst.
They call it fantasy, but like, it's a nightmare football.
It's like, it's kind of like dark fantasy, right? Like it's like more Game of Thrones than like Lord of the Rings, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, Lord of the Rings, like the good guys win at the end. And,
never the case.
You know, Game of Thrones, it's like all the good guys, all the heroes, they die. They walk into, you know, a castle expecting to get married, and then a song plays and everyone gets massacred. And, you know, that's sort of what it feels like to have the highest scoring team in the listener fantasy league, which I did. And then to have the highest scoring team in the first round of the playoffs, which I did. And then to have the second highest scoring team in the second round of the playoffs and to get beat by the king of the birds of war. I am furious. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. And with me as always, also blocked by Raider Cody, my co-host Taylor at Taylor_Witt. Buddy, what's going on?
Yeah, he cannot find us on Twitter at those handles. Everyone else can.
We're brought to you as always by Sports Illustrated's Arrowhead Report, which you can find at si.com/NFL/Chiefs. And on Twitter at Arrowhead Report and the Pigskin Podcast Network at PigskinPodNet. As always, you can get your official Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom merchandise. Our friends at DadBodTee, DadBodTee.com, or on Twitter at DadBodTee. We got a great show. I mean, really, like, we went through a little bit of a dark period ourselves, not just in fantasy football, but in real football. In the history of this show, the darkest period that we've ever been through, but it is back to being Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. We've got a great show again this week. We're going to talk about the news. We're going to talk about what is happening. We're going to recap the Chiefs' massive victory over the Steelers, and we're going to preview a really fun, interesting, cool matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals. So let's start it off with the news. We'll start off, as always, with the injury news. Clyde Edwards-Helaire did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. He's got a shoulder injury, and Mike Hughes, cornerback, did not practice on Wednesday with a personal matter, was back on Thursday. Joe Tooney, left guard, out Thursday with an illness. Fortunately, not COVID-19. And everyone else, Taylor, pretty healthy.
Not too shabby for week 17.
You know, the Chiefs always seem to have that late bye, and I don't know what it is, but, I mean, knock on wood, but the Chiefs have been pretty healthy going into the playoffs these last several seasons. They are again this year.
Yeah, since they drafted Mahomes, their bye weeks have been 10, 12, 12. 10, 12.
Got to have that late bye to get ready for the playoff push, buddy. COVID updates. Tyreek Hill and Willie Gay came back on Sunday. They went into the protocol early last week. They were able to make it back in time for the game on Sunday. Travis Kelce, Lucas Niang, and Nick Bolton all back at practice this week after missing the game on Sunday. They were activated on Saturday because for some reason you have to activate people from the COVID list the day before, even though they then have to also clear on Sunday to be able to play. Kind of a little bit strange. I'm not really sure why they do it that way.
They'll probably repeal that. Who knows? They're just kind of flying by the seat of their pants with these.
They will probably repeal that. We'll talk about that in a second. The Chiefs waived Elliott Fry this week. Their one-time kicker in this game, a good indication that Harrison Butker is expected back this week. Despite testing positive for COVID and being unvaccinated, he's going to be back this week, it sounds like, because they cut the only other kicker on the roster.
And if you suffered from PTSD from Curtis Siebel tweeting Elliott wide left, there's a class action lawsuit. So you can go ahead and join that because that definitely gave me all the PTSD I could handle.
Yeah. At Real Bird Lawyer, send me your DMs. We're getting the class together. Intentional infliction of emotional distress. It's a good deal. So let's talk about the COVID protocol updates because this is a big one. It's changing pretty much as rapidly as anything else with COVID is in our world today. The CDC guidelines are changing. There's a lot of indications that maybe the CDC guidelines are being pushed by corporate interests and maybe not actual science. But, you know, whatever. I'm not a scientist. I'm not here to preach about whatever. All I can tell you is that the NFL is changing its COVID protocol as Omicron surges. The latest adjustment this week is that basically anybody who is asymptomatic can play, even if they don't get a negative test and even if they're not vaccinated. So, like, the NFL's basically the NFL was like, man, fuck it. I guess we're going to play. We're going to play through it. We fortunately have learned, or at least it's been reported, that most of the players who have gotten this latest round of COVID, obviously with the tons of positive tests coming out in the last week and a half, have been of the Omicron variety. Doesn't seem like too many players are getting seriously ill. I have not heard of anybody getting hospitalized, but, you know, this is a good indication that this is what we're going to get going forward. I would assume this is going to be the case through the playoffs. So at this point, and again, knock on wood, I think we probably can scratch off the list the possibility of Patrick Mahomes missing a playoff game because of COVID-19.
Which is the best thing on the bingo board to scratch off. I mean, that's the one that could have changed the entire outlook of the season. That's the worst case scenario. I was reading the other day that the longest player that's been on the COVID list so far this year, Mike White, Jets, probably, I think, third string quarterback, had it, was on the list for four straight weeks or five, wow, maybe. So he's kind of the worst that anyone in the NFL has gotten it. But yeah, you're right. As long as Mahomes doesn't get it and isn't seriously affected by it or anything like that, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a protocol reason for him to miss like there was for Travis Kelce this last weekend. Cost me a spot in the Dynasty Fantasy Championship. No big deal. I'm over it. But yeah, that's the best case scenario is now that all the good Chiefs can play.
Are you over it though?
I'll never be over it.
Let's talk about the coaching carousel. This is something that the Chiefs, fortunately, are never going to have to ride as long as Andy Reid is coaching the Chiefs, as long as he decides he wants to coach in the NFL. He is going to be the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. But this time of year, and especially this year, because there's been a rule change, which we'll talk about in a second, this is the time of year that the Chiefs have to worry about their coaches, assistant coaches, coordinators being poached by other worse teams that want to get a piece of what we have. And so this year, teams can start interviewing for head coaching vacancies with 2 weeks left in the regular season, which would be now, only if they've already fired or otherwise lost John Gruden, the coach that they started the season with. So the Chiefs have not lost anybody to head coaching candidates or to head coaching interviews yet, but they do already have a significant loss. Linebackers coach Matt House has left the Chiefs to become the defensive coordinator for LSU for Brian Kelly. I wonder if Matt House is going to adopt a Southern accent.
That's a good pull. Yeah. Was that Joey Molinaro that, or, oh, he did a,
oh,
he
Brian made Kelly fun did, of Brian yeah, Kelly. He created a Southern accent in like a day.
Yes.
My family.
Do you know Joey from Barstool? He does a bunch of course. Yeah, he had a great little impersonation of Brian there. But yeah, maybe Matt House is going to go down there and develop some Southern charm.
Well, I don't know about his speech, his mannerisms, how that's going to change, but how does this affect the Chiefs?
Well, the linebackers have been really good, and it's kind of a position that, you know, they've drafted, put a lot of draft capital into, especially Gay and Bolton being two second round picks. But even Hitchens has kind of restored some shine on his career.
Hell, even Ben Neiman has been playing.
And Ben Neiman has looked a lot better, especially of late. And nobody really looked super good early when Willie was out, but yeah, I mean, I think Matt House has done his job here. And I think the reason that he is getting a promotion to being a defensive coordinator is because that's recognized, you know, in the football circles. And I would assume that there's a bit of a loss in what he was bringing to the Chiefs. I don't really know as far as how they're planning on replacing him or any of that business, but he clearly is an asset. We really liked him from the moment the Chiefs brought him in. Really seemed like he was a candidate for maybe even like a sneaky head coach hire somewhere if someone was feeling really spicy. But I figured if a assistant coach was going to go and it wasn't going to be Bieniemy, that one of the next names on the list was probably Matt House. And I'm happy for him, but sad to see him go.
Yeah, Tyrann Mathieu, who obviously is a big LSU guy, gave him his full endorsement. He obviously is not a linebacker, but somebody that I'm sure has worked with Matt House in the film room and had nothing but good things to say about him. It is a loss, I think, because the linebackers have been playing, I mean, frankly, better than they have played in years. Like, yeah. This is the best linebacker play the Chiefs have gotten this season, and especially lately, since Derek Johnson was doing Derek Johnson stuff. And, I mean, he really was the only good linebacker on the team. But, you know, we got guys flying around and making plays. And hopefully their ability to replace him internally is going to, you know, give the Chiefs what they need, obviously, as they're going to the stretch run and making a playoff push. It sucks to lose him at this point in the year. But turning the page over to head coaching vacancies, at least the Chiefs haven't had anybody interview for those vacant head coach spots yet, I guess. No, is that a good thing?
Well, you know, you and I have joked about this a little bit on the side. You know, Eric Bieniemy's coaching resume, I guess, seems to have taken a hit. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, for 3 years he was talked about as the next head coach of some team, and he never got a job, even though he interviewed for it constantly. And now the Jaguars have interviewed, I think, every male over the age of 25 in America for their head coaching job, and he's not one of them. And it just feels like maybe his time has passed. I don't know what his role has been on the Chiefs offense, and frankly, nobody really knows. And I don't know if he's the type of guy that the Chiefs might benefit from getting a promotion and kind of getting a fresh set of eyes on the offense, because they have stagnated regardless of their talent, regardless of how special they have been at times this year. It has not been quite the same magical Chiefs offense that we've seen for a couple years before this. So, you know, maybe part of that is Bieniemy's kind of, I don't know, running out of steam here with the Chiefs and needs to move on. I don't know. It's the part of the problem is that Reed and Bieniemy and, you know, all those guys aren't really open about who's doing what and how much say they all have. So we don't really, it's hard to analyze when we don't know that, but I'll be interested to see if any Chiefs, you know, coordinators or Kafka or maybe even Spagnuolo. I was kind of wondering, you know, he's been a head coach before. He's in charge of a completely revitalized defense, one of the hottest defenses in the NFL. I'd be kind of surprised if nobody wants to take a run at him as a new head coach.
Sure. And, you know, obviously the only team, well, there are two teams that are eligible to be conducting interviews right now.
Yeah.
The Jags, who have requested 8 interviews, including Doug Peterson, by the way, former Chiefs offensive coordinator. But the Raiders, who of course lost their head coach to a racist email scandal. Tragic racist email scandal. The second biggest scandal on Raiders Nation, you know, so far this year.
Third. Ruggs is probably second and Cody's
first. That's true. Cody number one. Yeah, that's true. Ruggs number two, Gruden number three. Yeah. They have the ability, if they want, to interview coaching candidates right now. And they supposedly are going to interview Todd Bowles, who's also got tapped for the Jaguars head coaching job. Leslie Frazier, defensive coordinator for the Bills. Obviously, Todd Bowles with the Bucks. Both of them candidates for both jobs. They're also expected to interview Gus Bradley, which please let him nail that interview somehow.
It'd be amazing.
And of course, Rich Bisaccia. But the Raiders are not going to make any formal interview requests at this time because they are still technically in the playoff hunt. And they don't want to be interviewing, you know, head coaches while the team is still competing for a playoff spot. Good move, bad move?
To me, I've never really been a fan of the interviews before the season ends in general. I've kind of talked about this a couple times that I really wish they would just say no interviews can happen until the day after the Super Bowl, but that's going to, you know, these teams that fire their coach early, they're going to be sitting there with their hands in their laps wondering what to do. But I feel like for the Raiders, it doesn't really matter. I mean, good move, bad move. I'm indifferent because their team isn't going anywhere. Even if they make the playoffs, they're not going to be of any consequence. And interviewing a head coach right now, I don't think will distract them because they're already shitty. So I'm going to say irrelevant.
I tend to agree with you, but I will say the Raiders, they have one more game of consequence. They do play the Colts this weekend. They're probably going to lose to the Colts, but they play the Chargers next weekend in Las Vegas. And, you know, the Raiders could technically, if they beat the Colts, which, you know, stranger things have happened.
Looked a lot better when Wentz was possibly going to be out with COVID. Now that he's back, it's going to be a tall task.
Well, he's not officially back, but you never know. I mean, like, and it's Carson Wentz. We're going to talk about him.
Sure.
Like, you know,
sure.
he's a little bit of a wild card in and of himself. But
a lot of one.
You know, the Raiders beating the Chargers in week 18 would be very juicy, be very spicy for us. A loss would knock the Chargers out of playoff contention. And, you know, we're going to talk about the playoff field here in a moment. You know, get Justin Herbert out of here. I don't want to have to face him again.
Get Carr into the playoffs.
He's too good. Get Carr into the playoffs. Get Herbert out. Go Raiders, baby. Let's talk about Raiders coaches. Somewhat tragically, although he was 85, John Madden passes away. I know your feelings about Madden, the video game, are well established.
Sure. But
do you have any Madden memories, positive only, positive vibes only? That you
No, I most certainly do. And all of my memories of John Madden are positive. So, you know, I was a kid growing up. I first started really remembering what football was in the early 90s, 93, 94. And John Madden did the Super Bowls in 97, 99, 2002, 2003, 2006, and 2009. So he was all over Super Bowl broadcasts for my whole, I mean, from when I was, you know, 10 to 22. And not only did I love the Madden video games back then, which I did, the reason that I hate them so much is because they came from
because
a place
of, what they've
of
become. Love,
because of what they were and now what they are. So, and the other factor is when I was a kid, Madden was a broadcaster. I didn't really know. I knew he was a former coach, but he wasn't a Raider to me. He was just a broadcaster, right, you know? And not only that, but he was incredibly jolly, incredibly personal, incredibly, you know, easy to like. And he's someone that everyone in the sports world had nothing but glowing, absolutely positive things to say about him. And as a sports fan in the early 90s and the 2000s, I completely am on that train. I thought John Madden was just like the Santa Claus of football. And I mean, he was not just because he was big and white, like he was just very happy and jolly and fun. And, you know, Jerry Jones said he didn't think that a single person did more positively for the NFL in the entire history of the league than John Madden. And I don't really see much of an argument there. He was phenomenal as a coach. He was phenomenal as a broadcaster. Everybody loved him. I really think this is one of the bigger, you know, kind of blows to the Hall of Fame, I guess, or any. I mean, I just think it's a really, really, he's a really great guy. I'm sad to see him go. Big loss.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And I mean, certainly neither you nor I were alive when he was coaching the Raiders to their glory back in the day, in the distant past. But yeah, I mean, he was great as a broadcaster. And obviously, I mean, you know, the current state of the Madden franchise aside, like, you know, back when he was more involved, I think, with the creation of those games, and he was the guy on the cover and, you know, was doing some of the commentary for that stuff and everything like that, you know, before he was just a name on the front of the box, right? Like, those games were much better than they were now. So I'm not saying, like, you know, the Madden taking a step back from Madden was the reason Madden got bad.
That's pretty good. That's a good take. You know what's
it's not as good as your take that Madden is the Santa Claus of football, which is
what's unbelievable is his last year coaching in the NFL was 1978. His first Super Bowl that he broadcast as an announcer 3 years later in 1981.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He coached the Super Bowl color commentator in 3 years. I mean, that was how good he was. He always said that the color commentary is just coaching the audience. That's all it is.
Right.
It's still coaching. He's just explaining it to a different group of people. And clearly he was a coach in everything he did. He's at his Hall of Fame speech. Someone asked him, do you consider yourself a broadcaster, a coach, a player? What are you in your mind? And he said, I'll always be a coach. That's just how his mentality was. I really like the guy.
Yeah. Well, it's time, Taylor, to turn our attention to
what is happening.
This is sort of our de facto segment to discuss the playoff picture and
week 17. We have a lot
to discuss. So let's start off with the current AFC playoff seeding, which is Chiefs number one, Titans number two, Bengals number three at 9-6. Very interesting. Bills number four, also at 9-6, Colts five, Patriots six, Dolphins seven. And before we get into the nitty-gritty here, I mean, you just have to love this playoff field, right?
Yeah, it's and especially you got to love it as a Chiefs fan. I mean, there's a lot to like here. There's a lot of beatable teams.
Yeah, there are a lot of beatable teams, and what really stands out to me is the lack of star power at the quarterback position. And when you think about, obviously, what it takes to win in the postseason, and this is something that the Chiefs, frankly, were pretty fortunate in their run to the Super Bowl in 2019. You know, they obviously they played Deshaun Watson, who is very good, but was quarterbacking a bad team. And they got Ryan Tannehill and Jimmy Garoppolo on their way to a Super Bowl championship. And nobody's going to hold that against us, right? Like, you would prefer to face those guys than you would prefer to face Tom Brady in the
and Super Josh Bowl, Allen. Right? Like, I mean, the run last year was tough.
Right. Give me Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl, right? Yeah. There's no Jimmy Garoppolo in the AFC playoff field, but you still have Ryan Tannehill, who has been playing a little bit better now that A.J. Brown is back, although he missed practice today with, I guess, maybe a new injury. Mm-hmm. But you got Carson Wentz in there. You've got Mac Jones, and you've got Tua Tagovailoa. The second best quarterback in this field is Josh Allen, who is playing pretty well right now. And the third best quarterback is Joe Burrow. And after that, like, you know, it's a bunch of guys.
Well, and the other teams that could make it in, you know, Lamar has been a shell of his former self even when he's been active, which he hasn't been lately at all.
Yeah, did Who you knows? See the update from practice today?
I did. Who knows how much rust by the time the playoffs come around, if he's ready, that he's going to be able to knock off. I mean, if they even make the playoffs. So,
which they won't.
Which they won't, probably. And, you know, Herbert, we have a lot to say about Herbert, but at the end of the day, he has a losing record as a starting quarterback. Like, as flashy as he is and as fun as he is, and I still think you and I agree that he's probably the second best quarterback in the AFC, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. Him or Josh Allen.
But he still can't win games yet. That's a really big part of the playoffs is to win big games. And I just feel like there was a time, I think I said this last week too, there was a time that we looked at this AFC field and thought, like, Jesus, there are like 10 really good young quarterbacks. And like, where'd they go?
Yeah, they're gone. Well, Deshaun Watson got in legal hot water and hasn't played football. And Justin Herbert just lost to the Texans. And, you know, Lamar Jackson is injured. Who could have predicted that? A running quarterback who takes hits the way that he does and also has refused to get the vaccine and is sick all the time.
All
shocking.
The time.
Baker Mayfield.
Never any good in the first place. But really, if he was going to take a step forward, this was the year. And he has not done that. So.
It's amazing because it's actually possible for the quarterback competition in this field to get worse because the Bengals can still lose the AFC North.
And I like Burrow.
The other three teams. I like Burrow a lot too. And we'll talk about him obviously when we get to the game preview. He's playing very well right now. He's clearly the best quarterback in the AFC North right now. Even if Lamar was healthy, Lamar midseason when he was healthy was not playing well.
Right.
And now he's injured. Like, he was held out of practice today. He came back. He was limping around yesterday. He didn't practice today. Doesn't sound like he's going to be available this week.
Nope.
You know, like, even if the Ravens were to pull off some kind of miracle and Lamar was going to come back completely healthy for the playoffs, I think he's a worse quarterback than Joe Burrow. And that says nothing about the other two guys that could still win this division because it's still in play for Ben Roethlisberger to win this division. And it's still in play for Baker Mayfield to win this division.
Please, either of them, please.
If Cincinnati loses to Kansas City this week and the Browns beat Pittsburgh, that sets up a winner-take-all between the Browns and the Bengals in Week 18. And the Browns, by beating the Bengals head-to-head, just they take that division. They clinched the four seed. They are making the playoffs, and we could see Baker Mayfield again in the playoffs.
What's crazy about having a winner take all in week 18 and then not getting the one seed from that is that you're basically going to have to play five playoff games to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. Yes, whoa. Five elimination games in a row. Not for us. Not
Give me
for
three.
Me. So the main reason the AFC quarterback field looks so hilariously weak is obviously because we have to take some special attention to talk about the Chargers.
Yes,
because
we do. Your Chargers.
The Chargers played the Texans, and I put out, in my opinion, a very funny GIF tweet thread. And it started off with, like, I was not watching this game live. I was at the Kansas City Museum. I was home visiting my family, so I was up at I forget what it's called. But anyway, the Kansas City Museum, it's in a mansion. I was going to remember the name of the mansion, but I couldn't remember it. Whatever. It's a historic house. So I was there. I was checking my phone because I wanted to see what the Chargers were up to, right? So the Texans come out. They score first. You know, I'm thinking, okay. So I pulled out that gif of that blonde woman doing the shaking her head thing. And then she's kind of like, well, but maybe. And then like, no. And then the Texans, you know, they piled up. They had a halftime lead. They scored right before half. They were up 17-12 at halftime. I pulled out that Donald Trump gif of him making all those weird, funny faces in a row where he's clearly like, you can literally like see the neurons firing in his brain. Like
they're not even firing.
They're trying to fire, but they're misfiring in his brain. And boy, then I dropped a Vince McMahon gif there at the end, because the Texans literally, like, they scored on almost every possession in this game. And if you're a playoff team, you can't be losing to the Houston Texans. You just can't.
Well, you can't be losing the Houston Texans in week 16. I mean, you know, like the Titans lost to the Texans as well. Shout out Texans. Good work there. But
yeah, they really have been extremely helpful to us.
But at least that was a couple weeks ago. Like the Titans or the Chargers had their playoff hopes on the line. That was basically a playoff game against the Texans and they blew it. And it's just very, very, very Chargers, very Chargers. And I felt like that game was something that there's part of me, and maybe it's a small part, but there's part of me that kind of wants the Chargers to be freaking good, because like I'm kind of bored with the AFC West.
Sure.
And I was, you know, not that bored. Like clearly I'm loving that the Chargers suck, but like,
it was great to play a meaningful game against a great quarterback in prime time and beat him to clinch the division.
It felt like a huge Thursday night showdown. Oh, a huge one.
Super fun.
I mean, Mitch said it was the biggest AFC West game in 5 years and he wasn't wrong, but then when they go up and they go lose to the Texans, then I'm kind of like, well, was it really a big game? Like, you know, I don't know. The Chargers are, they've got to be so, I know they are, so frustrating, but they're even frustrating for opposing fans. Like, just do it. Just one year, just do it. But they won't.
You know, I had a Chargers fan actually tweet at me today because I was tweeting about the Ravens.
I saw this.
And the playoff races. And he's like, "What? Why?" Like, I basically was saying, I hope the Ravens can win some games and keep the Chargers out of the playoffs. And he's like, "Why? Like, let us have this one." And I was like, bro, it's a compliment to you. Like, I would prefer not to play the Chargers again in the playoffs.
We want good teams to miss the playoffs. Like, that's how,
we want to play Tua and not Justin Herbert in the playoffs, right? Like, that's.
But do we?
I
mean, we do, but
we do.
It's wild how far they've fallen. They were on top of the division. They were, you know, firing on all cylinders. They looked like the Chargers were finally going to figure it out. But once again, the preseason darlings are crumbling down the stretch.
They had a 76% chance to make the playoffs last week. That is down to a 36% chance.
Oh no.
They had a 40% drop off from where they were last week. And they do need help now to make the playoffs.
You figure one reason their playoff hopes were, or their chances were so high, was because they probably were like 90% or higher to beat the Texans.
Right.
It was like, oh, all you got to do is get by this shitty Texans team and you're in. And they were like, pass.
Yeah. You just have to beat the Texans, the Broncos, and the Raiders. And now if they drop a game against the Broncos or the Raiders, which is well within their capability.
Absolutely.
Right? They will be out of the playoffs and we won't have to worry about Justin Herbert until next year, which would be a good place to be. In other news, another thing that is happening, which is what the segment is all about, is that Patrick Mahomes won AFC Offensive Player of the Month for December, which is his fourth such award in four seasons. So he is the third offensive player ever to win a Player of the Month award. And there's only four per year, you know. Mm-hmm. September, October, November, December. They give four of them out. He's the only third offensive player to win a Player of the Month award in four straight seasons. Tom Brady has done it. Steve Young has done it. No other offensive player has not done it. Peyton Manning has not done it. John Elway has not done it. You know, Aaron Rodgers has not done it. Ever. None of those guys have done it. Patrick Mahomes has not only done it, he's done it in his first 4 years in the NFL.
he's something else. He did it in his first month in the NFL. One of those awards is September of 2018. And he just, you know, as down and broken as people said that he was this year, he's still showing everybody that this thing's going to go through him. He's going to have a big say in how the NFL shapes out.
I just want to throw some more Player of the Month award stats at you here before we move into the recap. The Player of the Month award, Taylor, has existed since 1986. So a couple of these guys on the list did not get the benefit of having the Player of the Month award around for their first few seasons in the league. That legendary quarterback class with Elway, Marino, Jim Kelly. Those guys were drafted in 83. They were drafted in 83. So they don't get the benefit of these first four seasons.
I think Marino would have won all four of them in 84.
Yeah, he probably
would. Ever done.
That obviously he threw 48 touchdowns that year, which shattered the record. But Patrick Mahomes already has more Offensive Player of the Month awards than John Elway, who has two, and they came in his last two seasons in the NFL, by the way. Not only that, but in those seasons, Terrell Davis had more player of the month awards than John Elway did.
Oh,
so
that's
funny. His running back on his team, I mean, I'm not saying that John Elway was carried by, you know, Mike Shanahan and the run game, but
you're not saying it.
Dan Marino only has two, though obviously if the award had existed in 1984 and 1985, he'd have a lot more than two. But he probably wouldn't have, I mean, he wouldn't have more than like six or seven, right? You know, Pat would still be knocking on the door. Jim Kelly from that class as well, he won three. Patrick already has more than he does. Troy Aikman, Pat is quadrupling him up. He has one NFC Player of the Month award in his career. Pat has four.
That's crazy.
Matt Ryan has three. Ben Roethlisberger, future Hall of Famer, has one. Derek Carr has one, which he won this year, by the way,
yes,
in September. Yep. Eli Manning has won, probably a future Hall of Famer as well. Just one Player of the Month award in his entire career. Russell Wilson has one. Philip Rivers has four. So Patrick Mahomes just tied Philip Rivers, another borderline Hall of Famer.
Yep.
He's won four out of 16 possible Player of the Month awards in his career. So
that's crazy.
He's won 25% of the awards that he is eligible to win. And that's not even counting the fact that he was injured at the end of October, beginning of November in 2019.
Right.
So
right.
He missed a game in each of those months, really a game and a half in October because he got injured in the Broncos game.
He's kind of at 4 out of 14 then.
Yeah, he's really at 4 out of 14, which is 29%. So, you know, I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah, Romo had four, Marshall had four, Donovan McNabb had four.
His next player of the month
completed whole careers.
His next player of the month will tie him with the one-time all-time NFL passing leader before Tom Brady passed him, Drew Brees.
Yep.
So if he wins one more, if he gets to five, he'll have as many as Drew Brees.
And Drew Brees is like made for Player of the Month awards.
Yes, he is.
Like he's a stat stuffer. He did a lot of things great, but the one thing that you could say about him is that it's going to be really hard to match his counting stats and all of his, you know, the numbers he piled up. And he still only had five of those. That's crazy.
You know what's crazy too is, and I mentioned this on Twitter when I tweeted this fact out this morning, it's not like the MVP, obviously. Which is a season long award, and you're competing against both conferences, you know, all of the offensive players. But really, the MVP is really a quarterback award. Like it's almost impossible for a non quarterback to win the MVP.
Uh-huh.
So really, you're just competing amongst 32 guys, right? The offensive player of the month award, you know, running backs and wide receivers and tight ends routinely win players of the month award. In fact, Jonathan Taylor has won two of them this year. Cooper Kupp has won three.
Two. I thought he won his third this month, but he did not. But he's won two. I mean, he's crazy. And yeah, you're right. Emmitt Smith has five career. Barry Sanders had six career. Marshall Faulk with the four. I mean, yeah, you're right. People routinely win it outside of the quarterback.
It just goes to show you how hard it is to win one of those awards 4 years in a row, to have a month so dominant that you are considered the most dominant offensive player in your conference for an entire month. And to have a month like that 4 years in a row, only two other guys have ever done it. They're both Hall of Famers and like top 10 all-time quarterbacks. So
speaking of Hall of Famers and GOATs, do you know how many special teams Player of the Month awards Justin Tucker has?
I have no idea. Like 10?
He has seven, which is fourth all-time among all players for any awards.
That is insane.
I know. He won it November 13, November 14, September 16, November 17, September 18, November 18, October 19. He's crazy. He's best kicker ever. Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code TPPN, bet $1 on any team to score, and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code TPPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Let's recap this game. Chiefs demolish the Pittsburgh Steelers 36-10 in a game that was not even remotely as close as that ridiculous 26-point final score. The Chiefs were up 30-0 with 9 minutes left in the third quarter. They scored on 7 of their 10 drives. It would have been 8 had their backup kicker, Elliott Fry, who was just cut, not missed a 39-yard field goal just before halftime. I mean, This it would have been a fun game.
They would have been up 34-0 if he had not missed an extra point and a field goal. So
that's
a
good point.
Yeah, you know, they were completely dominant in every facet of the game, all three, well, except for special teams with the kicking. But even their, you know, their coverage was good, and their everything was on. Even Tommy Townsend's brother, Johnny, punted pretty well. The Chiefs were everything that we expected them to be at the start of the year. They were completely ferocious on defense. Well, maybe we didn't even expect that, but they were. And the offense moved the ball at will, scored four scores on their first four drives of the game, and were just absolutely on another level than the Steelers, who are a fringe playoff team. I mean, it was awesome. I love it.
Yeah, the Steelers could still make the playoffs. They probably won't, but they still could.
They could.
This was a wall-to-wall ass-kicking of a team that historically has really given the Chiefs trouble. We'll talk about that in a minute. But,
yeah,
I mean, we don't need to go through this drive by drive, because it was basically like score, punt, score, punt, score, punt.
Pick, fumble.
Score, pick, full penetration, score, etc.
Good work.
But major takeaways from this game. I'll start. The offensive line in this game was just outrageously dominant. And, you know, to your point, like, this is what we expected the 2021 Chiefs to look like. But I think, you know, I mean, at least coming into the year, you know, before week one, some of that was still wish casting a little bit. We talked to Dan Harms, obviously, during the preseason, and he was wowed by the offensive line. But even he said, you know, look, it's going to take some time to gel. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are all physical specimens. They certainly have a lot of ability, but how quickly are we going to see that come together? And there were points in the season where we saw flashes, but we certainly saw bad flashes in play too, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, miscommunication issues, obviously, you know, three rookies on the right side of the line when Niang was in there, you know, getting used to the way that Patrick Mahomes plays football, how he moves in the pocket. And for Patrick Mahomes, for his own part, to adjust to how the offensive line was protecting him, to be able to, you know, move in the pocket in a way that is going to let them protect him. This game, there was a play on Mahomes' first touchdown pass where he literally stood in the pocket for 8 seconds. Like, mm-hmm. I went back and counted it before he even had to move. Like, I mean, he just did not move at all. It actually looked like I think we actually maybe recapped one of these last year, but those Madden simulation games that they do.
Yes.
The quarterback pocket presence in those games is hilarious. Like, they literally don't move at all. He just stood back there and delivered a strike to Byron Pringle for the touchdown. But that's what all of this was building towards, all the struggles with the offensive line throughout the year, all the struggles, frankly, with Mahomes and his pocket presence. There were times where he looked, you know, pretty lost back there. But on Sunday, this is like, I mean, it was magical.
It was. And it was a game where the Chiefs were playing without Travis Kelce. And, you know, he obviously makes this offense go. I mean, no game exemplifies that more than the Chargers game. But without him, other guys stepped up, especially Byron Pringle with the 75 yards and two touchdowns. But Derek Gore was another guy that really showed out in this game and was second on the team in receiving yards and second on the team in rushing yards. Really had a nice showing for a young guy. And just the Chiefs showed their depth. They showed their depth with Pringle. They showed their depth with Gore. One guy that didn't really show depth that I was hoping would was Josh Gordon. There were three third down throws that all went Gordon's way that were all pretty catchable. The second one was kind of a corner fade to the left that he probably couldn't have caught. But the first and third targets for him were big third down throws that hit him in the hands that he didn't come up with. That was kind of a guy that I was hoping with Kelce out would kind of step up a little bit, and that didn't really happen. But other than him, you know, Mecole Hardman had a pretty good game. He had three catches for 31 yards and a touchdown. And Tyreek, with the two catches in the first drive, then didn't have a target for the rest of the game. He only had two targets. So he clearly was still, I don't know if it was the lack of practice or what the deal was, but he was not 100% by any means. So it was kind of the Chiefs' second tier offense with Mahomes and the whole offensive line. And they just worked the Steelers. And it was just it was a breath of fresh air. You know, I knew the defense would be good because Pittsburgh has a shitty offense, and I knew that they would hold Pittsburgh down because that's what they've been doing for the last eight games. But to see the offense go out there and drop a 36 spot on them was a sight for sore eyes and something that they're going to need to do here moving forward.
Yeah, that was actually my second takeaway from this game, was just how good it feels to blow a team out. Like,
yeah,
we obviously went through just a weird stretch. I mean, like, that's really the only way to describe it in hindsight, where the Chiefs blew out the Jets last year and then went 11 straight regular season games without winning a game by more than 8 points. And yeah, the Chiefs have now done that 7 times this year, including 5 of their last 6 games. Mm. And the Chiefs also obviously had, you know, a streak to start Mahomes' career of never losing by one score. The Raiders game last year was the first score that they lost by 8, which is still technically a one possession game. And then, you know, the Super Bowl was the first game that he lost by more than one score. And yeah, then, you know, coming into this year, obviously the shellacking at the hands of the Bills and the Titans,
yeah,
you know, it's almost like getting blown out, like sort of unleashed the beast, as it were. Like, we're talking about now 5 of the last 6 games, the Chiefs have won by more than one score. And a lot of those they've won by like 4 or 5 scores.
A lot.
And, you know, this is a version of the Chiefs that honestly we really have never seen. We never really saw it in, I mean, they were beating teams comfortably in 2019. In 2018, the defense wasn't good enough to beat teams like they're beating teams now. No. And, you know, early in the year, the defense wasn't good enough. And in the middle of the year, the offense wasn't good enough. And now, I mean, the only way you can blow teams out like the Chiefs are blowing teams out in the NFL is if you have all three of your units performing at a high level. That's
right.
We're at.
That's exactly right. And we begged for this. We begged for this when, you know, when the defense was struggling early and we were just said, just be 20th in the NFL. That's all we need from you. And then the defense started figuring out, the offense sucked. And we said, if they could bring back the offense that they had along with this new killer defense, they'll be really, really good. And sometime around, you know, really I don't know if the Giants and the Packers games, you know, the offense wasn't really clicking, but then that Raiders game, they put up 41, the first one in Vegas. And it was kind of like, oh my God, like this is what the team would be if they could figure it all out at the same time. 41-14. That's how good, that's the ceiling. And then they kind of didn't really do much on offense against the Cowboys and the Broncos. And then these last 3 weeks, 48-9 against the Raiders, 34-28 in overtime against the Chargers, and then 36-10 against the Steelers. And it's like, okay, now we're seeing what it's like when the defense clicks, the offense clicks, the turnovers have completely changed the game. So
yes,
in their first 7 weeks, when they were 3-4 and they were, you know, the sky was falling, everyone was broken, they were minus 10 in the turnover department, which was last in the NFL. They were giving the ball away a ton. They were not taking the ball away. Everything, they were losing the turnover battle constantly. They lost 2 games 4-0 in the turnover battle, which just doesn't happen under Andy Reid. And then since the Titans game, they are now plus 13 in the NFL over those in turnover department in the 8 games, which leads the NFL. So they went from 32nd in the NFL for the first 7 to first in the NFL over the next 8. And very clearly, you know, the defense cranked it up from 7 takeaways in the first 7 games to 21 in the last 8. And the offense way shifted down from 17 giveaways to only 7. So they figured it out on both sides of the ball. And it's not always about the turnover battle, but boy, I can't think of one stat that defines this turnaround more than that one.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point, because it actually segues nicely into my next kind of takeaway, stat from one of the PFF guys. In the last 3 weeks, Patrick Mahomes has the league's best success rate against cover 2 shell. And we talked about this throughout the season, and we even talked to Dan Harms about this earlier in the year. You know, it wasn't necessarily that the Chiefs didn't have the schemes to beat cover 2. It's just that for some reason, you know, teams were playing a lot of cover 2 and the Chiefs were not executing on offense. And those things were happening at the same time. So a lot of people sort of put 2 and 2 together and said, well, this is why the Chiefs are struggling. And it is true that, you know, playing the 2-high safety shell does force the Chiefs into being more patient and going on a 10 or 15 play drive to score, as opposed to scoring in 1 or 3 or 4 or 5 plays. Mm-hmm. And earlier in the year, you know, we saw the offense executing an extremely high level, just like literally historic efficiency numbers when they weren't turning the ball over in the first 4 or 5 weeks. And then it felt like the avalanche of turnovers really just like got them into this weird headspace where they kind of just felt like, well, maybe it is a problem with our scheme. Like maybe we don't know how to beat cover two. Like maybe it is us. And it turns out it wasn't them. Thank you for the Raiders for, you know, Gus Bradley twice going against the Chiefs with a, you know, cover three single high safety game plan, which they absolutely torched and got their confidence, got their swagger back.
Yeah.
Because now they're just doing the same things that they were doing. I mean, schematically, I don't know that that much has really changed from what they were doing earlier in the year. It's just that now, you know, Mahomes is on time. The offensive line is playing great. The receivers aren't dropping the ball. It's just execution, and they're executing at an extremely high level.
They are. And that's a hallmark of Reed's teams. And that's one of the reasons that not only was everyone so shocked when they weren't executing, but kind of the reason that people, the people who didn't panic about this team, the reason that they didn't panic was because the hallmark of an Andy Reid team, especially an Andy Reid Chiefs team, more than anything else, was taking care of the ball and taking it away, really. But I mean, he doesn't have as much to do on the defensive side of things, but just the fundamentals. And that was something that this Chiefs team, with everything else going on, the drops and the fumbles and the picks were all fundamental issues. And it just didn't look like the same team for those 7 weeks. It just didn't look like the team that, you know, has been here really since Andy came here in 2013. And then now that they're back, now that they, you know, they won the turnover battle against the Steelers 3-0, they executed, they didn't have any dumb screw up stuff. And it just felt like, you know, when that team, when this team executes, they're basically unstoppable. It's not just that they're really good. It's not even just that they're the best team in the NFL. It's like you cannot beat them when they execute. You just can't do it. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your game plan is. I don't care what your players do. If the Chiefs go out there and play Chiefs football and don't screw up, they're going to win. And that's a really, really good spot to be in with 2 weeks to go until the playoffs.
One final little takeaway here before we go into our awards segment. A listener, actually, original DMF, one of our Birds of War, asked me this question on Twitter today, and I did tweet this out, but this was just so preposterous, I had to share it with the podcast audience. Sure. So he asked me when the last time we had back-to-back wins against the Steelers was, because obviously the Chiefs now, they won their first, Mahomes' first game against the Steelers in his third start ever in 2018, where he threw the six touchdowns. We talked about that last week. And this game, so that's two straight wins over the Steelers. The Chiefs have played the Steelers 36 times, and that's asked you to guess today when the last time they had back-to-back wins over the Steelers was. You guessed the 90s, which was a good guess. The Chiefs had a great run of success for them against the Steelers in the 90s. They went win-loss, 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 win-loss. That was pretty much the best stretch of play they've ever had against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
It turns out the answer to this question, Taylor, is the last time the Chiefs won back-to-back games against the Steelers was 1970 and 1971, which is the first two games the Chiefs ever played against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they did not win two straight against the Steelers again until Patrick Mahomes became the Chiefs quarterback.
And not only was it two straight, they whooped him. I mean, yes, 36-10 in this one, and he threw six touchdown passes in the last one. So, I mean, they definitely it's really nice to have that positive momentum against the Steelers, because that's a franchise that, like you said, has had the Chiefs number. So let's get into our awards.
We're going to talk about five-star men first. It's just what it sounds like. It's players that, with their player saying, I'm a five-star man. And for me, that's Byron Pringle. 6 for 7, six receptions on 7 targets in this game for 75 yards and 2 touchdowns in a game with no Travis Kelce and Tyreek playing only 42% of the snaps, being targeted just 2 times. I'm going to talk about Tyreek again in another one of my awards. Spoiler alert. But he was not 100%, and I'll talk about that in a second. But since the bye week, Pringle has played over 59% of snaps in every game. He has caught 16 of his 23 targets for 222 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's in 6 games. So not earth-shattering production, but dependable, solid. He is turning into a reliable and consistent option. And really, with the Chiefs' secondary receivers behind Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, that's really all you're looking for, is somebody that is going to do what you expect them to do. which is be where they're supposed to be and catch the ball when it's thrown to them.
Don't run backwards. Don't fumble. Right. You know, don't be a detriment to the team, which right. none of the other wide receivers on the team have managed to do but Prinkle. So, I mean, that's definitely, like you said, the expectations are not very high for the wide receiver two spot, but they sure are higher than being a negative impact on the team. And Pringles anything but that second touchdown he had where he juked three guys out of their shoes was
great.
Amazing. I mean, he's got moves. He's a fun guy to watch. My five-star man is, I mentioned him earlier, Derek Gore. I think this was a game that I didn't really expect it to be a Derek Gore game, but really they turned one drive into the Derek Gore drive.
Yeah.
And this was where he made all of his hay. He ended up with three catches for 61 yards, but 50 of that came on this really nice little wheel route he ran where he kind of snuck behind the cornerback and then took off as Pat was moving around and ended up, you know, catching a long one there for 50. And then he had 12 rushes for 43 yards. He had looked like he had a lot of pop and looked like a guy that belongs on an NFL field. I did notice on two ESPN shows, they seriously referred to him as Frank Gore's son. So I think someone pranked them. I think someone like jokingly said like, oh yeah, you know, that's Frank Gore's kid. Like I don't know what happened, but both Dan Orlovsky and Zubin Mehenti both referred to him as like, oh, and that's Derek Gore's kid. I mean, that's
Frank Gore.
I couldn't even think of Frank. Yeah. So I thought that was very funny, but yeah, Derek Gore is my five-star man of the day. He was electric.
Yeah, he was really good. And that brings us to our trash man.
I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
Which is a nice contrast with Derek Gore, because my trash man is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I don't want to pile on the man when he's gone, because he does now have a shoulder injury.
Sure.
And he did have in this game a really nice touchdown run, where he bounced off contact.
Best play of his career.
It was probably the best play of his career. But overall, this was not a good day. He rushed 9 times for 27 yards, which is a 3.0 yard per carry average. His longest run of the day was 7 yards. And Daryl Williams in this game averaged 5.5 yards per carry. Derek Gore went for 3.6 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. But the biggest issue here is that Daryl and Derek Gore.
I know.
God, I know. That should not be that difficult. Derek Gore each had 3 targets. Clyde's one, and his target went for 4 yards. Daryl went 3 receptions for 30 yards, and Derek Gore went 3 for 61. Now, obviously, a lot of that was on that broken play, but like, why have we not ever seen Clyde Edwards-Helaire make a play like Derek Gore did? Because
he's not
play?
Fast. That's why.
That
at
is
the
why.
End of the day, his speed is what gets you targets as a running back. You know, you've got to be able to turn those targets into something, and. Right. He can't really turn space. If he's in space with the ball, if you're a dangerous NFL weapon, you're going to make something happen there. You know, Mecole Hardman's not very good at football, but he's certainly good in space. And there are guys like that that you just need to be shifty. You need to have something. And when Clyde gets the ball, he just runs into the closest defender and goes down, and that's it. And it's frustrating. And like you, I don't want to pile on him when he's down, but piling on him when he's down is how he got the collarbone injury in the first place. So I'm going to go with my trash man as Elliot Fry, and I can pile on him because he is no longer a Chief. So
he's no longer a Chief. Is he even eligible to win the trash man award?
He is. Even the coaching staff was like, all right, you're our trash man of the week. You got to get out of here. You're fired. So Elliot Fry, you know, I guess it's tough to be called on. Butker tested positive midweek last week, and they had to basically run out, get a kicker. And obviously the reason he didn't have his job is because he's probably not very good at kicking, but he missed an extra point. He missed a field goal. Could have been 40-13 or 10 or whatever, 40-10. But instead he cost the Chiefs some points. So Elliot Fry, you got to go.
And he did. He did go. Going on to the wild cards.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
These are players that are, you know, capable
of anything. That's the best way to describe it.
For me, I picked Tyreek Hill. This is maybe not a traditional wild card pick, but I just wanted to acknowledge Tyreek Hill's performance in this game with an award of some kind, and this was the best one to fit. So I mentioned he only played 42% of snaps in this game. He was targeted just 2 times. They were on the 3rd play of the game and the 7th play of the game. So that was it. And after that, he was on the field occasionally, but not – I mean, he was not targeted again in this game. We learned after the game that Tyreek, who went on to and then came off of the COVID list within a week was, and I quote, exhausted and, quote, just trying to do what he could to contribute. That's what Patrick Mahomes said in his presser this week. So he definitely was not 100%. And, you know, the other guys that came back, you know, I mean, you can see it. Like, even if they're not getting long COVID, even if they're not, you know, going to the hospital, like, it still takes a toll on these players.
It's and respiratory disease, yeah, for sure.
Tyreek Hill, we've talked about many times in the show, is like the best conditioned athlete in the world. Like,
of all time.
Like, he literally is running sprints like 100 times a game, and he's just dusting people, and he's the fastest player in the NFL. He's ridiculous. He obviously was not 100% in this game, but this is where the wild card aspect comes in, right? Like, just the fact that he is on the field, even though he was basically on the field for a drive and then came in on a play here and there, and he caught two passes. Like, the threat of Tyreek Hill being in a uniform and being able to trot onto the field at any time and dust the defense on a go route, like, it just changes the way that defenses play the Chiefs. And, you know, it does open things up for Mecole Hardman and for, you know, for Byron Pringle. And
yeah,
it would open things up for DeMarcus Robinson if he could run forward. But, you know, it was a gutty effort for him. I hope that he's back to 100% this week so we can see him properly dust the Bengals secondary. But he's my wild card pick.
You know, it'd be kind of funny to see, like, if Ty wasn't feeling very good or whatever, to see them line him up wide and just not have him run for, like, yeah, 7-8 plays in a row. Just stand still. And then just when the defense thinks, like, oh, this guy ain't even going to play, then, you know, he relaxes a little bit and then there he goes. Like, that'd be a kind of funny long con to play. I don't know why coaches don't ever do anything like that. But
sure, just have a guy stand there, like, do a Joe Flacco when he was, you know, the wide receiver.
But, like, do it with a guy that's then capable of doing something athletic, unlike Joe Flacco. But,
yeah, sure.
But yeah, just have him go out there for several plays in a row and not run a route, not block, not do anything. And then they're like, what are they doing? And then you burn them. I did also, before I get to my wild card, I had an honorary trash man that I forgot to mention last thing, which is a guy that fumbled two consecutive snaps when he came in relief of Patrick Mahomes, and that was Chad Henne. I mean, I don't know what was going on there, but he just didn't have his head in the game, and that was on a potential scoring drive that he just was like, nah, I'm just going to go ahead and drop both these balls on the ground and look terrible. So
it's fine. At least he got it out of his system before the playoffs, and hopefully we won't need him. But you know, if he's there, break glass in case of emergency. He was clutch last year. So
he was. Chad's still my guy. For my wild card, I'm going to go with the guy that led the team in tackles. And that's not typically a wild card type of performance. That'd be more of a five-star man performance. But when that player is Ben Neiman, he's capable of anything. And I just don't know. I just don't know if Ben Neiman's going to be good, if he's going to be bad, if he's going to get blown up on a play, if he's going to lead the team in tackles. He has been kind of the second half Stan Sorensen, maybe. He's been playing pretty well lately, but he still has that potential of, like, oh my God, where was Neiman on that play? Like, just completely hand on your head. So, I'm going to go with Neiman on that. He was pretty good in this game, but that means that he's capable of anything, because he's certainly capable of being bad also.
You know, we're getting into the game preview now, Chiefs of Bengals. I love that was the last sentence you said before we talk about this game, because that sentence also describes the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yes.
Let's talk about it. The 11-4 Chiefs are traveling to Cincinnati to face the 9-6, number 3 seed, number 1 in the AFC North, Cincinnati Bengals, in a matchup of two first place teams. The Chiefs are 14-15 against the Bengals all time. Who would have thought? Losing record against the Bengals in the all-time very season surprising series.
Wonder how many teams the Bengals have a winning record against. Can't be many.
Probably not many. But unfortunately, the Chiefs are one of them. Maybe not after this week. They have played the Bengals just twice in the Andy Reid era. They lost 36-21 in 2015. That was during that 1-5 start before the Chiefs rolled out that 10-game winning streak in the regular season and won their first playoff game in a million years. And of course, we all remember the 45-10 shellacking that the Chiefs put on the Bengals on Sunday Night Football in 2018, a game that was flexed to Sunday Night Football and then ended up being an absolute massacre in which Mahomes went for 358 yards and 4 touchdowns. So the Chiefs right now, Taylor, of course, are the AFC's number one seed. If they win out, they keep the number one seed, they get the bye. The Bengals are the 3. But are the Bengals good, Taylor?
They can be. They're an interesting team because they have a lot of firepower on offense. They've got two receivers that are over 1,000 yards. They've got a rusher that's over 1,000 yards. They've got a passer that's over 4,000 yards. That's something that they're all under the age of 25. That's something that's never happened before with players that young. So they definitely have a good skill player core. But they also lost to the Bears, and they also are just very – they're up and down. They're up and down. And with 9-6, they've been more up than down so far this year. But very clearly, I mean, you know, a Packers loss by three is no big deal. They also lost to the Jets for the Jets' first win of the year. And yes, that's a bad loss. And then they got blown out by the Browns. They lost – they got blown out by the Chargers in a game that they were kind of in until they screwed up on a play, and the Chargers had a fumble six.
They
charged harder than the Chargers did at that point. Yeah. And they also had a 3-point loss to the Niners, who were a feisty team. And there was a stat that was tweeted at me, which was by Paul Fuller, a frequent listener of the show. And I'm going to give him a caca. You're a bird of war, Paul. Congratulations. And he said, the average ELO rating of the teams the Bengals have beaten this year is 22nd and none higher than 15th.
Wow.
So while they have 9 wins, they haven't really impressed a lot. And I mean, that's kind of the definition of the 2021 Bengals.
Taylor, if you had to guess, and maybe you've looked this up today, so if you have, you know, just pretend like you haven't.
Sure.
Can you guess how many times the 9-6 Bengals have won 3 games in a row this year?
This year?
Yes.
I would guess none.
That is correct. They have not won 3 games in a row yet this year one time. And they just have won 2 games in a row coming into this game, which means, you know, just do a little math here. They're going to lose this game. They can't win this game. They haven't won 3 games in a row all year. It's impossible for them to win three games in a row. Yeah, so I think the tendency, you know, you look at the Bengals' offensive skill players and Joe Burrow, and, you know, this is maybe a fantasy bias that we have when we look at football from time to time, but, like, you're like, wow, the Bengals must have a great offense. And, you know, before they beat the Josh Johnson Baltimore Ravens 41-21, blew them out by 20 points. They were 19th in DVOA. That was one spot below the Broncos, and it was just ahead of the Steelers and the Raiders.
That's very surprising.
It is surprising to have the Bengals lumped in with those teams. Now, after they blew out the Josh Johnson Baltimore Ravens, they're up to 17th overall in DVOA. That's 19th on offense, so below average on offense, 14th on defense, which is a little bit above average, and obviously then 7th on special teams, which is pretty good. Although not as good.
I mean, that's a really interesting split for them. I definitely would have thought they would have been skewing heavy offense, but they're obviously not.
Yeah, you would think that. And, you know, this is an inconsistent team. I mean, not only have they not won 3 games in a row all year, but, like, when you look at the individual performances of some of their players, like, you remember Ja'Marr Chase had 754 yards in his first 7 NFL games.
Yes.
That was 107 yards per game.
Yes,
and he had insane 6 touchdowns. Since then, he has played 8 games, and he has 409 more yards, which is 51 yards per game, 4 touchdowns. Huge drop-off. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow is 7th in the league with 30 touchdowns, but he's also tied with Justin Herbert, Taylor Heineke, Ryan Tannehill, and Trevor Lawrence with a league-leading 14 interceptions.
Wow.
So he's, you know, he's thrown a lot of touchdowns. He's thrown a lot of picks. He has the 6th highest interception percentage of the 32 qualified quarterbacks. He's 13th in QBR, which isn't, you know, the end all be all, but
sure,
I will tell you where 13th is situated. That is the median between these quarterbacks: Tua Tagovailoa, Derek Carr, Jimmy G, Ryan Tannehill. And then on the other side, which would be a 14 on down, Mac Jones, Kirk Cousins, Lamar Jackson, and Dak Prescott, which, whew, Dak's really taken a big tumble until this last week.
No kidding.
But, you know, you look at Herbert. When you look at Burrow's counting stats, you know, you look at the 30 touchdowns, you look at the yardage, you look at the fact that he threw for 525 yards last week against obviously a decimated Ravens secondary. But
right,
you look at those numbers, and then you look at where he sits in QBR, where he sits in DVOA and DYAR, and he's kind of like, you know, riding in this mold with, like, Tua and Carr and Jimmy G and Mac Jones and Kirk Cousins, guys that are good but not great. And that's maybe not what you would expect given the numbers that he's put up.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, of the long touchdowns this year, 30 plus yard touchdown passes, Burrow leads the NFL with 13. Second place is Mahomes with 7. So he's almost doubling the field for long touchdowns. That's something that Mahomes, you know, clearly has made a big part of his game before this year. I couldn't believe that Burrow faces cover two. Yeah, exactly right. All people have to do is run a shell against him. He's never going to throw another touchdown pass. But they're a very interesting team because even though they have that ceiling, they don't always hit that ceiling, you know? And that happens with young players. Like I said, all four of those core guys are under 25, even Mixon. I was kind of surprised that he was 25. I thought he was a little bit older than that.
Yeah, he was really young when he came into the league. I think he was 20 when he
That's right. Yeah, that's right. He was. So they're a very interesting opponent. They're an opponent that as a Chiefs fan, I won't forgive them for the 2003 defeat when Chad Ochocinco, at the time Chad Johnson, guaranteed that they would beat the Chiefs, the 9-0 Chiefs heading into Cincinnati, and Cincinnati was like a 500 team, and then they ended up being the Chiefs' first loss, but the Chiefs ended up losing three more times that year and were not maybe all they were cracked up to be, but still hate him for that. The Bengals actually have a winning record. Guess how many franchises of the 32 the Bengals have a winning record against? The Chiefs being one of them.
Well, can you tell me what the Bengals – do you have the Bengals' all-time record in front of you?
I do. They are 372 and 458.
So not great. So I'm going to guess maybe 10.
You're going to guess that they have a winning record against 10 teams?
Yes, and a losing record against 22 teams.
Oh, gotcha.
Or they 21
have,
teams.
They have a 500 record against 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams, which is a little surprising.
I didn't think about that. Exactly 500?
Exactly 500.
What?
Yes. They are 10-10 against the Seahawks, ridiculous. 7-7 against the Saints, Vikings, and Packers, 6-6 against the Bears and Cardinals, and 5-5-1 against Washington.
That seems extremely statistically improbable for an NFL team.
I agree.
To have 7 out of 32 teams. Exactly a 500 record against 7 out of 32 teams?
I agree.
That is wild.
They also have a winning record against 7 teams. So I thought that was a little interesting. Wow. The Chiefs are... they're 517 winning percentage against the Chiefs, but then they have winning records against Browns, though? Giants, Rams, Falcons, Eagles, and Lions.
When the Chiefs win this game, they're going to have 500 records against 8 teams.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cause we're 15-14 or they're 15-14. Absolutely. Oof. 8 of the 32, a quarter of the league, they're going to be a 500 team against. That's wild.
Oh my God. This is amazing. This is the kind of quality journalism that you guys come to this podcast for. We didn't know that this was going to happen when we sat down to record this podcast tonight. Didn't. This is just a little bit of live podcast magic coming out here. So before we get into breaking down either side of the ball, we have to talk about NFL Network. You've put a graphic here in our show document, and I just want you to explain yourself.
Well, they've done this thing, this tail of the tape thing for a few weeks, or I guess all year, probably multiple years, I don't know, but where they give you four options: quarterback, running back, pass catchers, and defense, which first of all, if anyone thinks that an NFL game breaks down into a quarter of those things, they're idiots.
Yeah, but, what? Three like, things on offense and one thing on defense.
And there's no line, and there's no special teams. There's no coaching. It's a really poor job by NFL Network.
It's
but
really weird.
This was James Jones, former Packer, and a guy that has been on David Carr's show, or at least like they talk with each other a lot. And James Jones picked the Bengals for pass catchers, which I guess – that's a pretty big stretch to say that Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are better than Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
They have Tyler Boyd, who's good third
piece. Uzama's good. I guess if it's just, you know, by numbers.
Yeah,
if
I mean, got, it's...
Like,
you know,
like Kelce and Hill are better than the other guys, but
It's depth versus top-end talent. And I mean, like, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are both, like,
they're top good.
20 wide receivers, right?
They're very good, but...
Yeah.
Hill and Kelce are as good of a 1-2 as it gets in the league.
James Jones was a Raider for one season. I think that might have something to do with this.
Running back, they picked the Bengals, which I get. Joe Mixon's very good. The Chiefs running backs, while I like Darrell Williams a lot, he's not going to beat Joe Mixon there. Quarterback, the Bengals. They picked Burrow over Patrick Mahomes.
I mean,
a lot of that's recency bias on the 525 against the Ravens practice squad. They did pick the Chiefs for defense, so, you know, There is that, but the NFL Network, they've just been, that's just a negligent analysis. That's just them wanting to create some buzz. They wanted people to screenshot this and talk about it and all that stuff. And of course, that's what we're doing.
They got us. They knew what they were doing.
They did. You know, and that's kind of the,
we got the clicks out there,
the media machine there at work. I will say Damian Woody on First Take on ESPN, they asked him if he would pick Joe Burrow over Patrick Mahomes for the next 5 years. And he said he would. And they asked him to defend it. And he said that the reason that he said they both are very talented skill wise, but the reason that he wants Joe Burrow is the intangibles, is that he's a leader of men. It's that he turned this Cincinnati franchise around. Like, basically, if you hadn't heard him say Joe Burrow first and you just heard him talk about the quarterback, you would have been like, oh, he's talking about Patrick Mahomes.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's just a very, it was very poor. The coverage of this game so far has been very, very skewed towards the Bengals. I think the coverage, they kind of want this to be a bigger deal than it probably will be. I think the Chiefs are probably going to kick their ass, but they kind of want this to be a big showdown between the AFC's current one seed versus current three seed, a potential AFC championship match and all that stuff. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just not feeling it.
Well, I mean, you know, this is not a surprise because they've tried to do this for years, ever since Patrick came into the league and won an MVP in his first year and then won a Super Bowl in his second year as a starter. I mean, you know, it was Deshaun Watson. It was going to be Baker Mayfield. Yeah, and obviously it was going to be Lamar. It was going to be Josh Allen.
Herbert.
It still could be Josh Allen, I guess. But, you know, we sort of have to pivot to Herbert, who obviously is very good. But, you know, go beat the Texans with your playoff hopes on the line before we can really consider you a serious rival. I mean, we haven't played, you know, we haven't played Joe Burrow yet. And, you know, I think there is something to, like, the culture building aspect. Like, I would never say Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes because that's obviously preposterous.
Right.
But I mean, like, you know, Joe Burrow, I mean, I love Joe Burrow.
Me too.
I really,
big
and
fan.
I really like Justin Herbert too. Like, I like both of those guys. Yeah. Herbert, you know, just the throws that he makes, the plays that he makes. I mean, he's just really fun to watch. Joe Burrow does have like an edge to him. And like, it is kind of like, you know, part of that's Ja'Marr Chase is there too. But like, it is like he kind of went to Cincinnati and now they're, you know, that LSU championship team, which was like literally one of the greatest teams in college football history.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, you know, that's kind of what the Bengals vibe like. And it's kind of fun. Like, I think this will be a fun game. I do think that the Chiefs have the edge here, and we can talk briefly about, you know, the kind of matchups here. Chiefs offense versus Bengals defense. The Chiefs are fourth in pass DVOA and 15th in rush DVOA. So a very good passing team, average rushing team right now. The matchup against the Bengals, who are 14th overall in defensive DVOA, which is great, though, because the Bengals, while they are 7th against the run, so good run defense, they are actually just 22nd against the pass. So they are actually below average against the pass, below average pass defense against Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to say edge to the Chiefs.
I wonder if they have been all year, what they probably did, they probably looked at this game and they said, all right, this is in week 17. The Chiefs suck against cover two. We don't even need to game plan for this game. We're just going to install cover two, and that's going to be it, and we're going to shut them down. And then 3 weeks ago, they're like, shit.
Yeah, what do we do?
So, I mean, I think they're it doesn't really matter what type of – you know, I mean, Trey Hendrickson's very good, and he's had 10-plus sacks this year, and they've got a bit of some juice on the pass rush. But, like, their back end doesn't really do anything. Jesse Bates is a good player, but there's not anybody in coverage wise that I feel like, oh man, they could really shut down Hill and Kelsey. And at the same time, I just feel like when the Chiefs, as I said earlier, are on their game and are executing, like, don't even tell me about the X's and O's of the matchup. Like, that's really just the Chiefs offense against themselves. That's what they've been all year. And when they don't defeat themselves, they win the football game. And I expect that to happen again in this one.
Yeah. And we can roll over here to the other side of the ball. I think this is going to be, I don't know. It is the Bengals.
Strength versus strength?
It is strength versus strength. And I was going to say, and then I was going to catch myself. I'll just say it, but then I'm going to qualify it because that's what I do. I'm a lawyer. Sue me.
Yeah.
So
don't sue.
You know, don't sue me. That will not go well for you. The Chiefs might have to score in this game. And, you know, I don't know how the Bengals offense is going to fare against the Chiefs defense. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, the Bengals certainly have the offensive firepower and the chutzpah, as it were, to put some points on the Chiefs. Whether they do it or not is an open question. But, you know, this could be the kind of game that we saw, you know, like against the Jared Goff Rams in 2018, right? Like, it has that potential to have two teams with just the ability to go up and down and score at will, and it could be a really fun game. Now, when we talk about the numbers, the Chiefs defense is 13th against the pass, So above average against the pass, 19th against the run, so a little bit below average. The Bengals, again, the numbers just don't really add up to what you would expect their output to be. 18th in passing DVOA and 20th in rushing DVOA, which is surprising. So
right.
They actually are a worse passing offense and a worse rushing offense than the Chiefs are. And, you know, I guess we can talk about the big weakness for the Bengals, which you would never know from looking at NFL Network's Tale of the Tape, because it's not on there.
No.
Is the offensive line. And
yeah.
You know, the Bengals had a choice. We all knew it and talked about it to death before the draft. They had the 5th overall pick. They had the choice between Penei Sewell, who's a generational left tackle prospect who ended up falling to the Lions with the 6th overall pick, mm-hmm. and Ja'Marr Chase, generational, you know, wide receiver talent. And, you know, there was a lot of debate about whether the right move was for them to go get a generational left tackle to protect their, you know, star quarterback who they drafted 1st overall last year, or do they go out and get, you know, generational wide receiver to pair him with? And they chose a wide receiver. And it's hard to say when you look at the numbers that Ja'Marr Chase put up and, you know, what he's done as a rookie, which really is historic, although he's fallen off a little bit, but he's still on a record setting pace. It's hard to say they made the wrong decision, but I think after this game, we might have that conversation again.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, that's something that that was a big, big decision, and they'll probably look back on that decision the same way Chiefs fans are going to look back on DK Metcalf and Mecole Hardman and Jonathan Taylor and Clyde and all those decisions. I mean, there's always, you know, always draft butterfly effect stuff that goes on. I do think that the Bengals, so the big difference between the up and down nature of the Bengals season and the up and down nature of the Chiefs season is the Chiefs started down and have been up for 8 games.
Yes.
And the Bengals were up 2, down 2, up 2, down 2, up 2, down 2 all year. And
now they've been up 2, which means...
And now they've been up 2, which means they're probably going back down. But more than that, it means that their season numbers, when you were talking about their DVOA numbers, versus the rush, versus the pass, all that stuff, they're pretty indicative of what they're going to do on a weekly basis, because they are a full... They're about just as good as they were at the beginning of the year right now. You know what I mean? Their trajectory has been going up and down, but they're really at the same level. The Chiefs, when you look at their numbers, that's a whole season's worth of numbers, including 7 shitty games. And then the last 8 games, obviously, they've been otherworldly. And so there is some skew there that I think that, you know, when you compare the numbers and you might think like, oh, the Chiefs are doing this against the run this year and blah, blah, blah. But like, really, the last 8 games, the Chiefs have been the best team in the NFL by a pretty wide margin. And I just find it fun to match up with a team like the Bengals, because they're a confident team. They're a first place team. They're a team that, you know, like I said earlier, very well could be a future playoff matchup with the Chiefs. And at the same time, I feel that the Chiefs have the decided advantage in experience and in momentum and all these different things, that I do think that the Chiefs should, you know, win this game. And I think pretty, I don't want to say handily, because it might still be a one score game, but I don't think the Chiefs are going to, I think they're going to look like the better team out there. And I'm really looking forward to that. One final nugget about the Bengals, which I find this to be very fun and interesting. They have had 5 games this year where the winning team scored 41 points exactly. Wow. They beat the Ravens 41-17. They beat the Steelers 41-10. And they beat the Ravens again 41-21. And then they lost to the Browns 41-16 and to the Chargers 41-22.
Chiefs 41, Bengals
Yeah, he cannot find us on Twitter at those handles. Everyone else can.
We're brought to you as always.
Okay, hold on. Molly.
We got to deal with...
That's amazing.
Deal with this situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Hold on. I'll be right back.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?